My name is Gerald Cohen. I'm Associate Director of the Healthcare Technology Program, National Center of Health Service Research and Development. I'm organizer and chairman of this session. One announcement, our first speaker, Dr. Bruce Waxman, was unable to attend, and I will be reading his paper for him. Since I'm in the same program as Dr. Waxman, I'll be able to handle the questions that arise from that presentation. Why health automation? Why is automation one of the remedies of the ailing health industry? Well, let's look at your last hospital bill, your last increase in health insurance premiums, the last visit to the doctor. These are three very important reasons for health automation. If you look in general at cost of health service, it's a curve that I think is exponentially rising. Another symptom of our ailing health industry is that the demand for skilled and unskilled labor is outstripping the supply. There are even new hospitals going up who can only go into partial operation because of the lack of manpower. Compounding all of these problems is the increasing demand for the product of the health industries. This demand is created by an increasing population and increasing expectations of that population for more and better health care. Well, how can automation help? Automation can provide the methods, devices, and systems that can make the industry more efficient. Skillfully applied, automation can increase productivity of doctors, nurses, aides, clerks, and administrators. As to where the hospital automation can be applied, the answer is in every facet of hospital operation. Patient scheduling, history taking, record keeping, ordering and delivering of supplies, diet planning, diet preparation and delivery, the diagnostic and therapeutic procedures in all parts of the hospital. There is then an urgent challenge to apply automation in a meaningful, relevant way to the critical areas of the hospital. This is a particularly difficult task. There is no General Motors or U.S. Steel, no large unified group that can plow back part of their profits into research and development for the industry. Now, in attempt to fill this gap, why the government has a program recently established in their National Center for Health Service Research and Development. Part of that program is the Healthcare Technology Program. Do we lose the mic? Healthcare Technology Program, which is headed by Dr. Waxman. I'll now proceed to give Dr. Waxman's paper. The purpose of this paper is to examine the programs and aspirations for the newly created National Center for Health Services Research and Development. The center, by means of grants and contracts, supports, promotes, and stimulates a national program of health services research and development and demonstrations, including One, improving the availability of health services to all people. Two, assisting all health professions to improve their services. Investigating the comparative costs of alternate methods of providing and financing health services. Experimenting with new architectural designs, site locations, plans, new methods of construction. Five, increasing efficiency through new ways of training and utilizing health personnel. Six, applying and refining computer technology in screening, automating medical records, and selected other aspects of the medical care process. Seven, accelerating applications of new or improved techniques for the prevention, diagnosis, treatment, and control of diseases and disabilities. Eight, designing and initially operating experimental health service systems in urban and rural areas. Nine, making multidisciplinary analyses of the organization and functioning of all components of the health services system. Increasing academic resources for training health services research and development personnel. And last, establishing and operating a health services data system relevant to research and development, planning, policy making, and management. Much of this presentation will discuss the opportunities which exist in the development of this nation's computer technology in relation to the delivery of medical care. While we will only refer to opportunities which are not based on computer technology, remember that serious attention must also be given to these activities, as well as those which have to date been developed by employing both a digital and analog computer. Why do we lay so much stress on the development of computer technology? Few single technological developments in the history of man have had such sweeping and immediate impact on the way we live as a digital computer. It arrived so quickly and became so easily a part of the routine operations of society that often we are not aware of the numerous advantages our complex society derives from it, nor of the somewhat less tangible freedoms, mobility, efficiency, and flexibility directly accountable to its use. These applications of the computer and the derivative benefits have been in government and corporate data management systems, as well as in basic and developmental research. We need look no further than the telephone to note the remarkable increase in flexibility and human freedom because of computer control of the underlying machine. Today, we can dial any telephone in the world, and shortly thereafter, any individual in the world, with no intervening delay or human Those computers and terminals having telephones are already interconnected, although technical problems remain. While the pervasiveness of computer utility is already difficult to measure, its impact on the functioning of society is clearly as significant as the printing press or the radio. However, we have so far experienced, except in rare instances, only routine applications of the computer's potential. Computers have generally been used to handle tasks which humans, given the time and motivation, could do alone. The advantages the computer has to offer, then, are not in kind, but in quality. The profound utility of the computer so far has been principally found in its speed. Speed of operation, combined with inhuman precision, memory, and reliability, are the characteristics primarily responsible for the computer revolution and its insertion into the everyday affairs of our lives. However, in very recent years, and in rare instances before that, other qualities of the computer have been recognized, the principal one being complexity. A computer, however complicated, is not just a machine, but a machine plus its attendant software, without which it would be idle. Together, they constitute a system. The system has a history, and with each accretion becomes more complex. It is clear, then, that this complexity leads to a new quality which allows the formulation and organization of tasks which previously could not be contemplated for lack of a sufficiently powerful tool. A second characteristic distinguishing recent computer systems from those of the past is flexibility. A third is the ability for human operators to communicate with the computer system at interactive consoles in natural language. And a fourth is the increased capacity. In addition to speed, a human operator may now reasonably demand of the computer system that it be available whenever he wants it, that it have the capability to accommodate his problem, whether it is in information management or scientific computing, that it understand a semi-formalized language when he writes or soon speaks, and that it be unrestricted as to size and cost efficiency. We are at a point in the development of computer technology when we may begin to take the computer system for granted. That is, for practical planning purposes, we may assume it to be a tool which can in all likelihood extend, complement, and enhance human problem-solving capability in every way short of human cognition itself. Software problems remain, but there is every reason to believe that hardware technology will easily keep abreast or remain ahead of our ability to use it. A computer cannot think in any semblance of the meaning of that human characteristic, but it can remember and disgorge any amount of information in any context or in any programmed order. It can do high-speed analysis of data from statistical evaluation to servo mechanics as required and instructed. It can easily keep order in a complex system far beyond the capacity of the human operator, and it can communicate with the operator in natural language. With such a tool, a human investigator potentially becomes a giant. The limitation of his investigatory range is no longer time or complexity, but his own ability, intuition, and imagination for defining and structuring his problem for computer-aided analysis. Such a symbiotic relationship between human cognition and the computer has opened, and certainly will open, important new areas of investigation. It is not possible to predict adequately the increased range and power of human problem-solving and system analysis capability with such systems. Further, it should be clearly understood that such systems are available. A contract could be placed for such hardware tools with any of several computer manufacturers for delivery in 1 or 2 years. The effective use of such machines will depend upon system development. By this statement, we do not imply that technology has solved all hardware problems, but only that technological development far surpasses our current skills for its use, particularly in biological applications. With such tools becoming available, researchers find it difficult to clearly formulate the problems to be solved and to pursue complex problems in their manifold ramifications. The problems of designing software systems for analysis of data or for information handling resolve themselves eventually in the researcher's understanding of his complex problem. Of course, some current problems may be theoretically unsolvable using our present logical concepts, for example, language translation. But this has yet to be proved. A great deal remains to be accomplished within the framework of solvable problems. What do we mean by patient monitoring? Which parameters are critical for which disease? And how should the information be analyzed and presented for maximum utility? What should be the information content of a national tumor registry for it to be useful and effective for cancer therapy? How does the thyroid control system function? Are there significant inferential correlations between molecular structure and biological functions? If so, why? Although they may be difficult, such questions have two characteristics. They are formulated in the language of biological science and not in a computer science language. That is, the investigator is not considering whether a computer system can be built to do this task, but he is thinking about his problem in biomedical and biomathematical terms. As with most problems of this nature, there is hope of empirical, experimental, or analytical solution once one has clear statements of the problem content and a sufficiently complex tool for implementation of the effort. The significance of this is that piece by piece, these problems can probably now be solved. Software systems can now be accumulated and with time and effort made sufficiently complex to cope with the intricacies of important classes of biological and medical problems. The following is a brief summary of current and potential activities in biomedical applications of computers, which we envision to be important and even critical for the delivery of health services in the future. Generally, we are very optimistic about the role of computer-based technology in the future of medicine. It is difficult to underestimate the usefulness of this technology, which appears limited only by our ability to translate biomedical problems into an equivalent or complementary computer system, and by the current cost of such systems, which is decreasing rapidly to practical levels. Of course, we always bear in mind that classes of problems exist for which no solutions are known. That is the simulation of human cognition, but well inside that theoretical boundary, let me get a drink of water. Of course, we always bear in mind that classes of problems exist for which no solutions are known. The simulation of human cognition, but well inside that theoretical boundary, startlingly complex, useful tasks can be performed. For each of the applications for which exemplary computer systems exist, only in rudimentary form, there is a well-defined need, a large intrinsic value, one or more methods of implementation, and hence an inherent inevitability. They have not been completely or successfully implemented because of the rush of early false enthusiasm in this field and because of inadequate planning and support in the face of tasks which ultimately proved to be considerably more complex than first realized. Computers and computer systems have been used in literally hundreds of applications in the various biomedical disciplines. And while much of this work has been routine, a significant portion has proved to be of utmost interest in both medical research and in the delivery of medical services. It is now possible, and perhaps timely, to review this work, particularly in the latter category, to select that which is most promising. In principle, with current or possible systems, all of the problems of application that we will discuss are solvable, with the exception of one: pattern recognition. Biological image processing, population screening, automated patient records, and a host of other hard problems are only difficult, not theoretically unknown. Pattern recognition, especially in those fringe areas where it verges on the processes best exemplified by human cognition, present theoretically unsolved problems, and the only possible attitude is to be agnostic about their solution. Pattern recognition problems, however, are extremely important, if only because they are very ubiquitous. For we are always, as in diagnosis, dealing with patterned information. Further, there is no clear boundary between solvable and theoretically unsolvable problems. However, if we can define logical algorithms for translating every case of a given class of information handling problem, then that class is, for practical purposes, closed and solved. If we cannot define these algorithms, as in language translation, then either the problem has not been reduced to machinable form, or the machine and its software are not yet sophisticated enough for the task and perhaps cannot be. The applications here proposed are not theoretically bound in this way. They are essentially closed or solvable. Hence, there is room for realistic but imaginative solutions to developmental problems and an opportunity to plan for powerful ways to use computer systems. This discussion is limited to hospital and clinical applications. The uses in biological research and development are omitted. In the area of patient monitoring, there are two essential reasons for developing automated patient monitoring systems. They are, one, as the relative shortage of medical and paramedical personnel grows with the hospital population, more automation of nursing and paramedical duties is needed. Two, a truly sophisticated automatic system can gather more and better information because all critical parameters can continuously be monitored and the data can be presented in analyzed, correlated, and contextual form. Feasibility studies for patient monitoring apply to particular syndromes, that is, cardiology and shock, have been described in the literature. These studies show that it is possible to design automated systems for comprehensive patient monitoring. However, in addition to merely monitoring, such systems can be designed to materially aid the judgmental tasks of the physician. The data display could simultaneously present a contextual model of the current state of the patient, along with norms and standards and perhaps correlations with the last 10,000 patients of similar type, plus suggested therapies drawn from analyses of banks of patient data and predictions of future outcome. Permanent automated patient clinical records. Recent evidence shows that data management systems can be developed for the efficient storage and retrieval of data in narrative as well as numerical form. All patient records, in all their diversity and ambiguity, can be reduced to formats amenable to storage in structured files without loss of utility or meaning. The task, then, is to develop a sufficiently complex software software in a sufficiently fast hardware data file structure for the storage and retrieval of an immense amount of diversified information. Again, recent inventions show that such files can be designed for cancer patient data, chemotherapy data, and microwave radiation effects, for example. It is then a matter of deliberate development to create systems for comprehensive regional patient data files. The utility of such a data management system is hardly questionable, particularly if it is available at an inexpensive, interactive, remote computer terminal. In such case, a doctor in his office or a nurse on the ward can enter and retrieve information on either patient X or a class of patients having syndrome X. Along with a statistical analysis of the data, the terminal could be required to present recent medical innovations for syndrome X, complete with literary reference. Automated pharmacy, current hospital records. Initial developmental computer systems have been designed and used for current hospital patient data management. Information is entered, stored, and retrieved for hospital space allocation, hospital costs, and scheduling of available facilities in the hospital. The patient's current history, his chart, must be immediately available for perusal and additions, possibly at the nursing station or even at bedside. Information entered at this terminal can be transmitted as required to the kitchen, data records, or the pharmacy. Thus, a drug ordered at the nursing terminal can, with all sufficient safety checks, be delivered and accounted for automatically in the inventory of the pharmacy and cost records of the hospital. Clinical chemistry systems. Automated clinical chemistry laboratories exist in many places. Some even report analytical results automatically via computer terminal to the proper ward. These initial systems have shown the feasibility of fully automating this service, and along with computer-based analysis and display of the data, have shown the way to fully exploit the data available for maximum information on the patient's condition. It is probably true, in a complex sense, that blood is the biopsy of the body. Patterns of chemical species distributions in the blood can yield a great deal more information than is currently extracted from the few chemical tests of blood commonly ordered. Computer analysis and presentation of the data could be used as aids to the physician in both diagnosis and therapy. Continuation of current development is all that is required. Population multiphasic health screening. Just as X-ray mobiles screen entire populations for TB, in the near future, computer-based systems will, in conjunction with remote input terminals, screen that population for a large variety of symptoms. ECG analysis can now be handled via telephone line to a central computer, where the automatic analysis is fail-safe in the sense that all normals are rejected while suspected abnormals are referred, along with a tentative diagnosis for human judgment. Similarly, Papanicolaou smears could be analyzed using a TV band for transmission to a central computer, and various screening and diagnostic aids may be invented. Patient interview. It has been said that answering of 32 yes-no questions will inevitably lead to the diagnosis of abdominal pain. Even if this were true, the process would be inordinately inefficient and expensive to automate, since it would require 2 to the 32 or more than 4 billion binary alternatives. As current experience has shown, present systems can automate much of the initial patient interview. A computer can interrogate the patient at an interactive terminal with results similar in detail to those gathered by experienced paramedical personnel. That is, the computer can properly route him along with a complete history for appropriate further examinations, tests, and specialist's judgment. Pattern recognition. Pattern recognition, in the sense intended here, is a euphemism for machine or artificial intelligence, as it includes not only image processing described above, but also a certain inferential capability. Probably no area of technology today has so great a potential reward as does the development of intelligent machines. Perhaps no problem is as difficult. However, the development of artificial intelligence is frequently confused with the simulation of human cognition, and partly because of this error, the pursuit of artificial intelligence has been neglected. The simulation of human cognition may or may not be possible, but such an argument is beside the point. The effort should be to design very sophisticated machine systems, whether or not they behave as a human might, which have limited associational memories and inferential logic. In biomedicine, such machines could be used for automated tissue typing, for searching the literature, for detecting patterns in cancer data, for directing research into the most promising channels, for patient monitoring, and generally for vastly expanding the problem-solving capability of the physician or investigator by drawing directed inferences from data banks and by forming inductive hypotheses for further investigation. Because of the difficulty and the magnitude of this problem, an adequate presentation requires considerably more argument than is appropriate in this context. However, the potential return on a deliberate program for the development of such sophisticated machine systems is so great, not only in biomedicine, that it should no longer be neglected. Up to this point, we have placed a great deal of emphasis on the potential of computer technology in the delivery of medical care, But these are certainly not the only technological opportunities that exist, which have great potential for vastly improving our ability to eliminate disease in our population. One very exciting possibility is the potential for developing a spectrum of machines which are useful in the detection and screening of cellular disorders. These machines to date have taken two forms. The first of these, the cell-recognizing devices, employs various pattern recognition schemes in an attempt to distinguish malignant from normal cells. Such investigators as Mendelsohn of the University of Pennsylvania and Preston, PerkinElmer Corporation, and Ingram, University of Rochester, have achieved limited success. However, such efforts are still in the stage of basic research, and a machine does not yet exist that can be routinely used for investigation of Papanicolaou smears or sputum samples. Although this work continues to be very important, it is unlikely that these efforts will reach a stage of practical application in the near future. The essential difficulty is the vastness of the unsolved pattern recognition problems. In a second parallel development, several machines have been produced which attempt to separate normal from abnormal cells using essentially hydrodynamic spectroscopic techniques. Kamensky of IBM and Nuclear Research Associates Incorporated have already conducted preliminary studies which, on the basis of limited clinical trials, indicate that it is possible to screen populations and separate normal from abnormal cells with 90% accuracy. We predict that within the next few years, the feasibility of these machines will have been established, and it will be possible for the first time to screen large segments of the population with a high degree of accuracy. Certainly, we have not enumerated all of the potential areas of engineering and technological development that can be amassed for attack against the infirmities which plague our population. Nevertheless, the newly formed programs of the National Center for Health Services Research and Development are making a concerted effort to identify potential areas of technological opportunity in the delivery of medical care and to develop targeted programs which will systematically bring the best of modern technology to bear on the critical biomedical problems of our times. Thank you. I'm afraid we've overrun a little bit, so I think we'll get on to our next speaker. If you'll excuse me just a moment. Our next speaker is Mr. George Webb from the Biomedical Engineering Department of Johns Hopkins University. Mr. Webb has for a long time been associated with projects in the area of patient monitoring, and he will present a paper, One View of Automation for Patient Clinical Care. Mr. Webb. You want this? That's right, I'll okay. Yeah, if you're going to use the...
We don't have any pointer, do
yes.
we?
That's a pointer.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, one view of automation for clinical patient care is a nice catch-all and allows me to say about what I want to. The view about which I do want to talk is a rather broad one, and I will draw on our own experience in pediatrics monitoring, coronary care monitoring, myocardial infarction research monitoring, data processing, and observations of equipment and what others are doing. I wonder if the projectionist could keep a little bit of lights on, except perhaps when there are color slides. I think that the primary message of this talk is that the tools for automation may be available. They are only going to pay off, be useful and acceptable, operationally and financially, if we take a better overall look than most of us have been doing. and keep in mind all of the automation ramifications of automation. We as engineers must think in terms of providing answers to medical problems, not merely displaying or printing physiological variables. Very quickly, could we see in this audience how many are here from the press? Oh, that's very interesting. How many here are primarily industrially oriented? Okay. How many here are primarily medical types in delivering health care in some kind, MDs and so forth? Good. And how many of you are engineering types working in medical institutions? You may overlap several of these. And how many of you are here just bored waiting for the next paper? I'm not going to describe in detail a system. You wouldn't copy it, and you shouldn't. I'm going to raise some questions with the hopes that we can move in a helpful direction with a minimum of false starts. We are not talking about separate bits and pieces, although we're going to look at some separate bits and pieces. We are talking about complicated systems working together. Duplication of operations or equipment must not mushroom if costs are to be kept down. And there is not a direct correlation with what I'm going to say and what is printed in the digest. Could we have the first slide, please? A lot of what is in this was said by Mr. Cohn in relationship to what Dr. Waxman was saying. Up at the left-hand side, we have an unhappy individual who comes and sits in a chair. Eventually, he sees the doctor. The doctor sends him to another chair where he waits to go to a lab. After the lab, he sits in a chair and waits to see the doctor. He may or may not end up in a hospital bed. The hospital services supply the doctor, the lab, and the bed. There is a flow from the doctor to the records. And in a very little significant corner over there on the right, you will see patient monitoring. And I'm trying to put this in the context to which it should. It fits in with a very large system. After the patient finishes with the doctor, he's quite happy until he comes down to that little thing called a bill, which we helped to automate. And he may or may not be happy after that. Let's look at some of the reasons, and I'm not really facetious about all of these, for automation systems. We want to improve patient care at any cost. Do we want to reduce medical care costs? Do we want to increase the amount of care provided by staff? Do we want to provide research information, provide better care? Or do we want to merely generate a status symbol? And I've had some questions come to me, which the proponents of the questions said they wanted automation for status symbols. I think these questions should be continually asked by us, and I mean all the groups that we talked about, when we're talking about automation. Now, what are some of the points at which automation can come in? Appointments. You've heard about that. Patient history, practically all of these have been mentioned in the previous talk. One of the areas in which we've been involved is this matter of sitting on chairs waiting. A lot of the cost that is not always considered is the cost to the patient of getting care, particularly for the poor. How much is it costing him to come see the doctor? And if it costs too much, he's not going to come back. During a particular day, we have a limited number of patients we want to see. We have a limited number of doctors and labs, and the numbers of doctors and labs may change day by day. Our problem here is to fill this volume uniformly so that we have a good flow of patients to the doctors. The doctor doesn't wait. The patient waits a minimum amount, and he goes through the sequence in which he should. He may have to see two or three labs before he gets back to a particular doctor. These are girls, these are computers that should not be overlooked. Can any of the computers that you know work as well as these in walking into a room and answering questions like, is the patient in the room? Is he in the bed? Is he asleep? Is he awake? Is he alive? What does he smell like? These are all important questions. And these are all questions that these computers, which have a comparable rental value as our hardware computers, these are questions that these can answer best. And I bring this in because so often in designing automation systems, we do not take these people into sufficient confidence and find out what they can do best and what they can't do best. They can't remember details. They often can't write down things, but there are many things that they can do. Are they best in continuous observations, in periodic observations, keeping records, real accurate records, administrating therapy, and somebody spelled that wrong, comforting patients, comparing present data with previous conditions? This is probably where they fall down the most and where automation can help. And the bottom one is detecting important aperiodic events. And this is where automation can fit in. In thinking about the nurses and the medical staff that's going to use this these automation systems, let's always think of all the variables, all the ways to present material, not the way necessarily that you've done it in the past. Maybe meter readings are good, either digital or display. Oscilloscope waveform is the easiest to use and probably the least useful. Permanent records, printed data, XY and Z plots. All right, let's look at some of the present monitoring. Here is a ward in which the patient monitoring some of the equipment is located beside each bed. Another one, could you try to focus that one a little bit better, please? Notice a couple of things about this one. And this is one that the engineers, unless they get deeply involved with these situations, don't always think. This is a real patient, and look how apprehensive she is. She's biting her fingernails as she watches the monitor. Now, the nurse's station. What is the relationship of this monitoring equipment to the nurse's station? Do we have to duplicate at the bedside, at the nurse's station? These are questions that you cannot answer by yourself as engineers, and you cannot answer by yourselves as medical people. Here's one of the most complex monitoring stations I have visited, and I'll give reference to these different sources at the end of my talk. This is a computer-based backup post-operative care. The two oscilloscopes at the top are from computer readout, and on demand from this nurse, she can ask for past history of this patient, both immediate past and quite a good deal of the way back. It gives direct write out when she wants it and can aid them a very great deal. There are not many, as far as I know, of installations as complex as that one. Here is a working situation of a 4-bed coronary care unit. And you can see here the amount of paperwork that the nurses are doing. And are the nurses really most efficient at doing all of this paperwork? And notice two or three things, other things. They have written on little pieces of paper and put up on the monitors, the pink pieces up there at the top. And down here, it's hard to see unless you can focus it a little bit better, and even then you probably can't see. Here are little strips of chart recorder paper from the EKG where they have put what is normal for this patient. In other words, this particular monitor system has not thought through how you identify who is where and how you identify what records, what is standard for that patient. Now, going back to our first slide, let's give consideration to how this data here, the monitoring data, fits in with the permanent patient record. It is the responsibility of us when we design this to design it so that it fits in with that. Now, here's a standard ECG presented on an oscilloscope. But as soon as it's gone, you essentially have forgotten what its characteristics. Next slide, please. The next kind of an oscilloscopic display is a TV. This is a central monitor control station, and you may want to see what is going on at a remote place by TV. Another kind of display that we have is the direct writer. We'll come back to this record a little bit later. How well does this fit in with the total system? Here is another most efficient way to present data. What happened at 1650 over there? Now this is computer output. This may be useful, but was this completely thought through to provide the nurse, the medical staff, and the final record with the most efficient data? In acquiring data, do we want to wire in every single bed? Do we want to make data acquisition carts that we can take to the bedside and then bring back and look at the data? Record data, and note this item right up there. I'll come back to this in a later slide. And this is one of the most important points that I would like to try to get across. Maybe you want to have an acquisition cart which is completely portable with direct recorder, but not with tape recorder. If you're going to use a tape recorder, have you thought completely out what you're going to do with the tape data and who is going to do it? Back to the nurse's station. Here is another one in which we are getting a paper record. Does she know in 5 minutes from now who this record was made on? She has a whole great number of patients to deal with. She's watching two oscilloscopes. An emergency may come up. Does she know what that record was? In place of the nurse's station, the data may come back to a central processing laboratory. Now, back to that written record. And if there's anything that I can get across at this meeting, I think I would like to try to make this point. And that is, if you are going to take a record, and that record is going to last more than 5 minutes, and you have another record either in series or in parallel, you need to automatically identify that record. And except for a very few places, research, I don't know of any manufacturer who is making equipment that will automatically, without question, identify records that are being made. Another small item in this same category is, what is the calibration of these? If we're going to automate systems, we have to automate the calibration. How many of you manufacturers produce equipment with an extra wafer on your gain switch, which will tell the automation system what gain setting that switch is on? I defy any of you to trust yourself or nurses to write down every time without fail what gain you operated a particular system on. Is the teletype really a good input terminal? How many of our people can really work teletypes or a keyboard with a minimum of error? Let's look real quickly at different kinds of data. Here's an old one that we worked with some time ago and proved some useful. Heart sounds, frequency, time, amplitude. Amplitude versus time. The same amount of information, same information presented in different contexts. The ECG to give you some kind of a retrospective view. This is almost an immediate view. The ECG starting the sweep. This happens to be on a fiber optics oscillograph onto direct printout paper. That same kind of information presented on the paper, but without amplitude modulation, a deflection with just intensity modulation. It gives you a different kind of information. The same kind of information presented on an oscilloscope and photographed. The same kind presented on a direct write-out. Where we are doing analysis and data presentation, this needs to be done in the lab, in the ward, as soon as possible. Now, the computer offline may calculate histograms. This is a histogram of the R-to-R interval, the number of R-to-R intervals occurring at different intervals over a period of about 3/4 of an hour. This is an offline process and may be very useful in giving us a quantitative indication of how drug therapy has worked. If we do this online, then the computer can give this out immediately and present it to the nursing staff. Atrial fibrillation. Or at the end of the day, the computer can plot out all of or a large group of variables which have occurred during the day, and the medical staff can review these. The computer also can calculate complex functions. This is a respiratory over a full day, respiratory function, volume versus pressure, and you can notice that at this point the relationship was getting very low, and intervention was introduced and the ventilation was greatly improved, decreased again. This kind of automation may feed back to give us better medical care so that we recognize when we do things inaccurately. What about reliability? There are 8,760 hours in a year. What is the minimum time to failure, not the mean time, the minimum time to failure of our medical monitoring equipment? And do we have any statistics on this? Do you as manufacturers really know? What's the minimum time for repair for medical monitoring equipment? This is not a trivial matter either. Let's go. Did we go to the next one, please? Well, it's just as well not to put that in focus. And I don't mean you to read that at all. But this is a flow diagram of part of a one-bed research unit. The solid lines are where solid data are flowing, and the dotted lines are where human intervention is introduced. What I'm saying by this slide is that you need to analyze carefully all of the paths for all of the data and not just stop when you display it. Where does the data go? And are you putting the data in a form that will take it to the best place? All right, now, in conclusion, let's look at some of the conclusions we've come to from our own experience and looking at others. First of all, we ignore this too much, and I don't think that we are much different than other people. Examine and state our objectives. Be very specific and keep after this. And consider our objectives in the context of the total data management. That is, from the time that the patient comes in until it goes into his permanent record. Run a pilot study. Don't assume that you know how you want things to go. And I think this is one way to cut down our costs. If we run pilot studies, budget at least 1%, and 1% I've merely pulled out of the air, but budget some part of the system cost for independent consultation. It's amazing what happens when somebody outside of your environment asks the same question that you asked inside. The old problem of the advantages of the expert. Obtain involvement of all concerned. Don't let the engineers do the whole job. We have done this too many times in the past. Don't let the medicals. Don't let the nurses. Don't let the service staff. Buildings and grounds. Board of trustees. Everybody needs to be involved. Use system supplier with an active, ongoing, going got left off there, involvement with delivery of health care services. To you in the manufacturing industrial area, you need to have an active participation in medical care, delivery of medical care, so that you are not just taking paper specifications without really knowing what is required. Produce an operations manual so that at 2:00 in the morning, when something has happened and some other goofball has turned every switch in the wrong direction, a person who is not too familiar with it can get the system back in operation. It will save your hair. Include a training program if you can at all. This may be for very few people, it may be periodic, or it may be on installation. Budget at least 10% of system hardware cost on in-house maintenance. Now, in this large installation that I am presently involved with, I can say categorically that except for one piece of Hewlett-Packard equipment which has come into this work job, we have not had one piece which did not have to have major in-house correction or return to factory or factory personnel in order to get it into satisfactory operating condition. And I should also say that this was true of other Hewlett-Packard equipment. I don't mean to say that Hewlett-Packard is perfect. In one case, it was. This is not a trivial problem when you are talking about operating equipment 8,000 hours a year. This is not laboratory operation. Have system responsibility clearly stated. Who, the manufacturer, the in-house people, who are going to make it work according to the original specifications? One person told me that he is putting on all of his purchase orders that the equipment is not considered accepted for payment until all documentation on that piece of equipment
which was delivered has been delivered to them. Not typical documentation of circuit diagrams, but the circuit diagrams of what was delivered. And that's too low for you to see, but in conclusion, I say, remember Murphy's Law. I would like to thank or express appreciation for having some of those slides, which I have obtained through some manufacturers, of Lenox Hill Hospital, just in case some of you recognize them.